Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. Here's the big question of the day. Are we raising a generation of wimps? That's what Psychology Today seems to be worried about. And, they're raising a host of interesting questions. Are we parenting children so that they are going to be completely unprepared to stand on their own? Now, I just want to say, if Psychology Today is concerned about this, I can guarantee you we're concerned about this. Psychology Today is kind of the pop psychology newsweek of the magazine world. And I would suggest that they are really a part of this coddling culture. And when they're concerned about it, boy, we really ought to take a look at it. That's going to be our topic of conversation for the program today. Are we raising a nation of wimps? Interesting stuff to look at, and we'll have an interesting discussion starting in just a few minutes. Of course, last night the big news was President George W. Bush presenting his 2005 State of the Union Address. It's a big deal. The President of the United States bears a constitutional responsibility to report on the state of the nation to the Congress. It does not require a national address. Doesn't require that the President go to the Congress. President Thomas Jefferson felt that perhaps just a written report would suffice, and so he sent along a written State of the Union report. But President Bush is following the precedent of most presidents before him in going to the Congress, standing in the House of Representatives chamber, speaking to a joint session of Congress to deliver what is a major oration. And in the television age, this has been an opportunity for presidents to set forth their agenda. Some of you may remember that President Bill Clinton used to take the State of the Union as an opportunity to set out a laundry list of programs that he was going to propose to Congress. No one perhaps understood the theater of the State of the Union address better than President Ronald Reagan, who used it as an opportunity to show what he wanted government to get out of in terms of business. He would take in reams of paper and say, that's the tax code, we need to shorten it. He would bring persons into the well, into the house, and he would show them as examples, whether they be persons who had given exemplary service or persons who represented something of a particular program that he was directing. But President George W. Bush went last night, of course, just a matter of days after his inauguration for a second term. And if anything's going to be remembered from last night's address, I argue it will be purple fingers and simple prose. The purple fingers, of course, the ink, symbolically worn by members of Congress who stuck their finger in ink in order to identify with the Iraqi people in their historic election on Sunday. That's big news. It is a representation of freedom. Just like those yellow ribbons tied around trees during the first Gulf War, this is a reminder that we're all a part of something. And that little bit of purple ink spoke loudly. And I think not only in the United States, but also around the world. But last night, the speech was about simple prose. Last night was not a massive rhetorical event. The president really didn't even take on any massive new issues. He didn't propose any massive new programs. But he went back to the familiar themes of his presidency, and for the second administration, he reset what he was going to be up to. There was one big deal that had to do with a major change he's going to propose, and this demonstrates what I think is real political courage, and that is to take on the issue of Social Security. The president said we owe it to the future generation to get this set right, because otherwise that program will become bankrupt by mid-century. But I have to tell you, my favorite part of the address was what many did not expect. And that was when the president went back, as he did a year ago on the same occasion, to advocate for a constitutional amendment protecting marriage. That's big news. Let's listen to a little bit of what the president had to say last night. First, he spoke about the values that sustain a free society.
Our second great responsibility to our children and grandchildren is to honor and to pass along the values that sustain a free society. So many of my generation, after a long journey, have come home to family and faith and are determined to bring up responsible moral children. Government is not the source of these values, but government should never undermine them.
Now, there's something very important there. And because a speech like this is a part of the nation's tradition, and because of the national schedule on an annual basis, sometimes citizens do not give adequate attention to what is actually said and the serious arguments that are really put forward. President Bush said that the government doesn't develop values. That's just massively important, because in the 20th century, with the rise of big government, many people in that secular age really did believe that the government decides what the values are. And President Bush said very clearly, government is incompetent to be the source of those values, but he said government should never undermine them. That is a vision of limited government, and frankly, it is a refreshing vision of limited government compared to what even some in our own political system had hoped for and advocated for in years past. But when the president got to marriage, you could see him zeroing in on his target, and as I was listening last night, I had hope that he would land just where he landed. Listen to this. You talk about political courage, this is what it looks like.
Because marriage is a sacred institution and the foundation of society, it should not be redefined by activist judges. For the good of families, children, and society, I support a constitutional amendment to protect the institution of marriage.
The president did not have to say that. He's already on the record in favor of this amendment. It was a gutsy political move last night. It was a demonstration of courage. He didn't have to do it. He will offend all the people who will be offended by this. He will direct media attention, close scrutiny to his comments, and he did the right thing. And he deserves our respect and support for it. Two big emotional high points last night. And again, I'll go back to Ronald Reagan. He knew how to do this, and every president has been his student since. And George Bush understood exactly what he was doing last night. He gave the nation a gift, and he gave it to them first in the person of an Iraqi woman who was sitting right next to the First Lady. Listen to this.
One of Iraq's leading democracy and human rights advocates is Safia Taleb al-Suhail. She says of her country, "We were occupied for 35 years by Saddam Hussein. That was the real occupation. Thank you to the American people who paid the cost, but most of all, to the soldiers." 11 years ago, Safia's father was assassinated by Saddam's intelligence service. 3 days ago in Baghdad, Safia was finally able to vote for the leaders of her country, and we are honored that she is with us tonight.
Of course, Ms. Al-Suhail then received a standing ovation from the members of Congress there gathered, members of the cabinet and others, for that formal occasion. But if that kind of got the American blood flowing, what happened with two parents of a dead soldier just brought everything into clear focus. This is a long clip, but folks, you need to hear it. If you missed it last night, you're going to want to pay close attention now. And if you heard it last night, you're going to pay even closer attention, because you're going to want to hear it again.
One name we honor is Marine Corps Sergeant Byron Norwood of Pflugerville, Texas, who was killed during the assault on Fallujah. His mom, Janet, sent me a letter and told me how much Byron loved being a Marine and how proud he was to be on the front line against terror. She wrote, "When Byron was home the last time, I said that I wanted to protect him like I had since he was born. He just hugged me and said, 'You've done your job, Mom. Now it is my turn to protect you.'" Ladies and gentlemen, with grateful hearts, we honor freedom's defenders and our military families, represented here this evening by Sergeant Norwood's mom and dad, Janet and Bill Norwood.
Wow. I mean, that just catches the American heart right where we need to be caught. And both as a parent and as a patriot, you have to look at that and say, this is an incredible moment. And it's not just about these parents and that one dead soldier. It's about all those who were represented by that couple and by that one soldier's death, because this is what is, in the final analysis, the big take-home value of an event like last night. It is a reminder of who we are as Americans and of what it cost to buy our freedom in the first place, and to maintain that freedom even now. And it is a reminder that we are linked together in a compact, not merely a political agreement, but a compact. And in spite of the fact that even in that House last night, in that chamber, there was a division between Republicans and Democrats, we're all Americans. And we can talk about the lamentable low state of political discourse in this country. We can talk about how dangerous it is to have this level of political strife between the parties. But in the final analysis, the folks who were standing in the House of Representatives chamber last night, senators, representatives, members of the president's cabinet, the Supreme Court, and others, they weren't standing as representatives of a political party last night. No, when it came to recognizing these parents, they were standing as Americans. Now, all the partisan labels came out with full importance when the president got to policy. Just observe the fact that he was actually booed and heckled when he talked about Social Security. It's a reminder that there's a war in Iraq, and there is, in its own way, a political war right here at home. The issues are live, they're current, and they're important. And that's why we talk about them right here on the Albert Mueller Program. And we're going to be back to talk about whether or not we as parents are raising a nation of wimps. That ought to catch our attention. We'll be back with your calls in just a moment. The number 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We'll be back for a conversation that'll be decidedly non-wimpy. I'm Albert Mueller. The article certainly caught my attention. It's by Hera Estroff Murano in Psychology Today. The title, A Nation of Wimps? The summary of the article is this: parents are going to ludicrous lengths to take the bumps out of life for their children. However, parental hyper-concern has a net effect of making kids more fragile. That may be why they're breaking down in record numbers. Interesting stuff here when you start looking at it. This is Psychology Today. Now, I got to tell you, I think of Psychology Today as a pretty wimpy magazine. I mean, it's all this self-esteem stuff, all this are-you-happy stuff, are-you-having-bad-dream stuff. I mean, it's all this kind of, well, culture of psychotherapeutic wimpiness. So when they're concerned that we're raising a nation of wimps, boy, we really better be concerned. It's like an arsonist who's afraid of fire, I'm afraid to say. But in this particular case, we've got something going on here. And this particular author, I think, zeroes in on a lot of the problems. Listen to this. Behold the wholly sanitized childhood without skinned knees or the occasional C in history. David Elkind, one of the nation's leading child psychologists, written some good stuff, by the way, I want to say. He says, as kids need to feel badly sometimes. We learn through experience, and we learn through bad experiences. Through failure, we learn how to cope. Just take this. Listen, with few challenges all their own, kids are unable to forge their creative adaptations to the normal vicissitudes of life. That not only makes them risk-averse, it makes them psychologically fragile. Riddled with anxiety. In the process, they're robbed of identity, meaning, and a sense of accomplishment, to say nothing of a shot at real happiness. Whether we want to or not, we're on our way to creating a nation of wimps. Interesting little points they bring out, anecdotes that have to do with kind of verifying this trend nationwide. First of all, what happens in school? In school, these kids are coddled. Everybody has to be a success, and everybody has to get A's. You have grade inflation. When he became president of Harvard University, Lawrence Sumner's discovered that 94% of the college graduates were graduating with honors. 94%. That meant only 6% were average. You don't have to know much math to know that's a problem. Now, in Garrison Cuyler's fictionalized town of Lake Wobegon, all the children are slightly above average. But evidently, ludicrous as it is, according to the test scores and the honors passed out in a lot of schools, all the kids are not only slightly, but greatly above average. All these learning developmental disabilities and all the rest, if you are a college teacher, a high school teacher, a university professor, you're going to be confronted with parents who are going to bring you letters, dossiers, documents, entire folders proving that their kid has to have a special dispensation because either they can't take timed tests or they have this particular learning disability or another, and most of it just comes down to the fact these kids are normal. David Anderegg, a child psychologist in Lenox, Massachusetts, professor of psychology at Bennington College, said this, quote, he had a student who said, I wish my parents had some hobby other than me. He went on to say, the psychologist, if you have an infant and the baby has gas, burping the baby is being a good parent. But when you have a 10-year-old who has metaphoric gas, you don't have to burp him. You have to let him sit with it, try to figure out what to do about it. He then learns to tolerate moderate amounts of difficulty, and it's not the end of the world. Hey, you know what? I don't hear this kind of common sense from a lot of psychologists. When I get it, I like to read it. Let's enjoy this. Over 40,000 United States schools no longer have recess. Why? Because the kids don't have time to play. They gotta be on their way to being a corporate mogul. The play itself has been corrupted. No more dodgeball. No more competitive sports because everybody has to win. By the way, I had a dad tell me about going to a Little League banquet the other day where the awards meant everyone got the same award just for being there. Even the kids that didn't play got an award. They all walked away with the same trophy. Now, the kids know this is a lie. Some of them are good and some of them are lousy. Some of them belonged on the team and some of them were there basically to wear a uniform and hold a bat and look good in the picture. That's about it. And that's the way sports just has to come down. And I say that as one who's not a big sports fan because I wasn't big into sports as a kid for good reason. I was a kid with a book. You know, we're just not all equally good at everything. But you wouldn't know that. Not if you're going into today's psychotherapeutic culture. By the way, a particular angle on all this is how cell phones play into it. College officials are saying that kids used to go to college to develop independence from their parents, but now they call their parents about everything. Literally everything. I got slight indigestion. What should I do about it? I turned in my term paper a day late. What should I do about it? These kids are never going to grow up because they never leave home. With their cell phones and with their parental umbilicus, they don't have to. I think this author is really on to something because when you look at the argument, you see this is us. This is where we are. Listen to this. Parents are so concerned about children having high esteem, but as one psychologist said, when you cheat on their behalf to get them ahead of other children by pursuing accommodations and recommendations, this especially in this whole area of learning disabilities where you can cook up a disability to explain anything, it robs them of their own sense of achievement, of efficacy. In other words, if the kid knows that the parent came in to get him an easy ride, the kid is not only robbed of a competitive environment, he's robbed of feeling like he really accomplished something. If he knows the A was negotiated by his parents, then what pride is there in the A? You know, I like this guy. I like this article. I like this particular topic. I think it's on to something. I think this is important. If we're raising a nation of wimps, it's because we're raising a generation that we've never let fail. You know, the kids don't even get to play on the playground. One of the things this author talks about is you go to the playground, you watch the kids playing, the parents are out there with them because they're afraid little Jason's going to fall and hurt his tush on the playground equipment. They're afraid he just might fall and, you know, turn his ankle or something and get hurt, or some kid might bump into him and knock him down. And, well, that would hurt his little self-esteem. Are we raising a nation of wimps? It's time for you to join the discussion. I'd love to hear from parents about this because my guess is we all kind of got nailed in this article because this is the culture of parenthood we see. And as a matter of fact, we're living in a time where we're told we are being cold-hearted if we let our kids actually compete, which means they might actually fail if they don't actually win. Give me a call, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Are we raising a nation of wimps? And if so, what are we going to do about it? I said this is going to be a non-wimpy discussion because we're just a part of the problem if we talk about the challenge of raising a nation of wimps and we have a wimpy response. Let's just not whine about it. Let's talk about what we could do about it. What kind of parenting changes would we have to make if we're going to make sure our kids aren't wimps? 877-893-8255 is the number. We're going to go to Tampa, Florida, where Tom's waiting to talk from WTBN Radio. Tom, go right ahead. All right, we lost Tom there. We've got some other callers here coming on the line. We're going to get to them real quickly. Caller number two, you're on the line. Go right ahead.
Well, I'm calling about the article. Very refreshing. I love it. I am a parent of two children, 15 and 5. And sometimes you do listen a little too much to the teachers, and I think a lot of times you need to go with your heart. Love the article.
Well, thanks for that word. By the way, I don't have your name. We got you on so fast here. Caller number two, what's your name?
Dion.
Dion, okay, listen, what a sweet word. I appreciate that. You got a 15-year-old, boy or girl?
Boy.
Has he ever gotten a skinned knee?
Oh, yeah, several times.
All right. Was that the end of the world?
No. It's not at all.
Well, I think you are a rare mom, I have to tell you, because right now there are a lot of moms who think somehow we as a parent have failed if the kid gets a skinned knee or doesn't get chosen for the first round of the baseball team or comes home with something less than a 100 on the score. Now, obviously, we want to see our kids succeed, but the big issue is whether we're going to try to do the succeeding for them and just hand it to them as a completed thing. In which case, they haven't succeeded at anything. But we can pat ourselves on the back as parents and think, hey, we've done this. What great little successes we've raised. Then the first disappointment that comes their way is absolutely devastating. The number 877-893-8255. We're talking about a nation of wimps. And this is the Albert Mueller Program.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Sounds like you struck a nerve on this one. I think this article is going to get a lot of attention. And by the way, we're going to put the link up on our website, so you can go read it for yourself. It's found in Psychology Today magazine, but it's not currently now probably on the newsstands. They tend to move out pretty quick, but it's there on the Internet. We'll help you to get there to read it. I think all parents ought to read this, even if it doesn't nail you right where you are. It'll help you to understand what's going on in the culture of parenting all around us. Let's go to Linda calling from Louisville, Kentucky, listening on WFIA. Linda, go right ahead.
Hi. You know, I was just calling to comment on the article, and I think I'm the parent of a first grader. I've been a room mother. We've been involved in soccer and several other activities that involve groups of children, and I think the other end of the spectrum is I see a lot of children who are left to raise themselves. You know, first graders who don't get any help with their homework, who don't bring projects in on time because their parents didn't remind them, who, you know, wear dirty clothes because their parents don't have clothes ready for them. So I think, you know, on the other end of the spectrum are the kids that are, you know, not being shielded from anything, that are living, you know, kind of a grown-up life years before they should have to.
You know, Linda, I think you're really onto something very, very important that we could have missed in this entire conversation today. And that is, I don't know if it words in your mouth, but as trying to explain the same thing you're discussing, I think this is a problem with middle class families more than anything else, of baby boomer parents and others who are raising these kids. There are an awful lot of kids in other social contexts who are having grave difficulty. And if these kids are never growing up, there's some other kids that have had to grow up all too fast. And, Linda, that's a very sensitive point to make and a good ground for another program. And so just with full intellectual honesty, we need to say, obviously, this doesn't relate to all families, but it relates to an awful lot of the ones we get to see all the time. And I can tell you as a college and seminary president, I see this with parents who think their kid is the sharpest, smartest thing that ever came down the street. Now, he may be sharp and smart, but he's probably not the sharpest and smartest thing that ever came down the street. And if he is, just wait. Somebody else is going to come along later. But they often don't even know because they've never had to read a book. They've never had to write a paper. They've never had to take a test. And I'll tell you, if you are a Little League coach or you are a high school teacher, you're going to be confronted with parents who are going to tell you exactly what kind of accommodations you're going to have to make for their kid to be a success. Which means we're not talking about a level playing field here. We're talking about a customized landing pad for every kid. Thanks for your call, Linda. Very important point to make. Let's go to Kathy, listening on WTBN, calling from Clearwater, Florida. Kathy, go right ahead.
Yes, I had a comment to make because, unfortunately, the parenting style you described is a lot of what I did with my firstborn, who right now is 20, and I wish that I could go back and make her more responsible because every little thing makes her so frustrated and have so much anxiety that I have now counseling, psychology counseling, to kind of help her get through with these things that she is really having a problem dealing with, which are just normal life challenges.
Yeah.
So it's just really been a challenge. I also have two young boys that I'm trying to do a little differently, but it's a parenting style. And you just want to protect them from everything. And then all of a sudden they get to an age where they're supposed to be doing it for themselves. And guess what? They can't.
Kathy, boy, I really appreciate your call because there's nothing like firsthand testimony, especially as you're talking about your daughter here. And when you ask, you know, how can you help her so that she won't kind of get stuck in wimpiness? I would say that nothing succeeds like success. And I mean by that authentic success. And that's where I think we can help our kids, whatever the age, to understand what they can do by discipline and hard work and have an achievement. They can enjoy that achievement, enjoy having accomplished something, and then set a higher goal and go after that. I think there are two different extremes we have to watch. One of them is giving your kid an unreachable goal. I mean, that's absolutely, I mean, telling a two-year-old he can go build a house or something like that, that's absolutely ridiculous. Or on the other extreme, doing it for the kid and then robbing him of the opportunity to really struggle and strain for something. And so, boy or girl, I think the point still remains. And Kathy, I appreciate so much your honesty. And I think one of the things you can help your daughter to do is learn how to solve the problems herself. And one of our critical life tasks we know as Christians is to find contentment. And that contentment is going to come by an honest analysis of the fact that we are sinners. Christ has saved us, but he saved us for a purpose, and we need to go find that purpose. And we need to find contentment, not in being coddled, but in learning how to take appropriate risk. And that means opening ourselves to the opportunity to get hurt or sometimes disappointed. But that's a part of adulthood. That's a part of life. And frankly, that's a part of the kind of risk-taking I think God would have us to do. And we need to find contentment even in the midst of that. And we need to admit, for all of us, that's sometimes a pretty significant challenge. The phone number is 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. We're talking about A Nation of Wimps, fascinating article, and even more fascinating conversation. And we'll be right back. Well, go figure, folks. Here we are talking about this Psychology Today article about A Nation of Wimps. And I'll tell you who's ready to talk about it. Moms. Makes me wonder where all the dads are. Maybe they're already in that Nation of Wimps. Well, maybe I made somebody mad enough to give me a call. The number 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. You know, it used to be the stereotype was the mom who coddled the kid and the dad that kicked him out of the crib. I'm beginning to wonder if that really works that way anymore. Maybe that's a part of our problem, too. Let's go to Debbie calling from Louisville, Kentucky, listening on WFIA. Debbie, go right ahead.
Yes, Dr. Mueller. I'm a mother of two, a 23-year-old and an 8-year-old, both girls. And I can say that I can see a difference in parents in that 15-year age difference.
I bet. Tell us about it.
Well, my 23-year-old is in third year at pharmacy school, has always been a good student. You know, when you went to games and stuff, there was a score kept back then. Now, in sporting events, you don't even keep a score. You know, the parents keep a score. The parents know which team win at the end of the game. But, you know, the kids are all, like you said, supposed to be winners.
Okay, Debbie, hold on with me here a minute. Don't you think the kids see through that? I mean, all this the sporting stuff where no one's supposedly keeping score. I love your honesty. You said the parents are keeping score. Well, I guarantee you the kids are too, don't you think?
Oh, I'm sure, yeah. But one other point that I wanted to make or talk about was my 8-year-old does have learning disabilities, and she does have to have accommodations, and it was like I told your screener, it's not a point to where I want her to be the best or I want her to get A's, but she does need help with her learning. So there are kids out there who really need it. I do think that it is overused. I think people use it as an excuse, and it's like you said, even though they might have an average child, they want that child to be, you know, the best and the brightest.
Good point, Debbie, and I appreciate, frankly, all you had to say. And I especially enjoyed the distinction between the 15 years of your first daughter and your second when you just kind of laid that out and you said, look, you know, back when my first daughter was around, they used to keep score. And I think that's a very important point. I guarantee you the world's going to keep score. So here's the big deal. When you get out there and you're on the sales force, they're going to keep score as to how many cars you sell. You know, I mean, they're gonna keep scores how many houses you build and how many people you get on your plane or whatever your job is. In other words, out there in the real world, someone's keeping score, and they're always going to be keeping score. What have you done for me lately? That's the way you keep your job. That's the way you get promoted. That's the way you achieve. And so I think we're lying to kids when we just coddle them and try to hold them this way. By the way, let me read one other sentence from this article. This is from A Nation of Wimps in Psychology Today. It says here, middle-class parents especially assume that if kids start getting into difficulty, they need to rush in and do it for them rather than let them flounder a bit and learn from it. This is a particular psychologist speaking here saying, I don't mean we should abandon them, but give them more credit for figuring things out. I think that's just good advice. And frankly, even if it comes from this particular article from Psychology Today, let's take it seriously. We need to help them get ready to figure it out for themselves. And by the way, there's one point in here that I think needs to be put on a billboard all across America. It says the goal of parenting is to raise independent adults. I don't think you'd know that observing what a lot of parents are doing these days. Let's go to Kimberly calling from Princeton, Texas, listening on XM Satellite Radio. Kimberly, go right ahead.
Yes, I was calling in to say that I believe we're raising a generation or a generation of wimps because I'm a teacher in the school system, and I hear a lot of times that you have to coddle a kid or you have to overlook of what a child does because of where they live or what their socioeconomic status is. And I don't believe that the consequences should be any different for someone who's in a low socioeconomic status as opposed to someone who's in a higher economic status. I think the consequences are whatever's going to be done if the child is disciplined at school or gets in trouble at school should be across the board for everybody.
Kimberly, appreciate your call. And I think you raised an important point. And I would say this. I think we need to understand where the kid is right now. And different kids are at different places, and there are socioeconomic factors with that. But you don't dumb down the standards. I agree with you. That's exactly the wrong thing to do. But you do have to say, how are we going to get this kid honestly out of this situation where they are right now, you know, off this plateau where they are right now and onto higher ground? Because when they get out in the real world, again, they're going to have to compete on real terms. And so lowering the standards is definitely not it. And, of course, we face this in the educational world with test scores, with admissions requirements, and all the rest. And I think we've really confused things, and we've confused it to the detriment of our own children. Nathan's calling from Los Angeles, California. Nathan, welcome to the program.
Yes, hi, Dr. Moeller. The thing about this that really concerns me, and I see it all over the place, is that this attitude of affirmation rather than achievement tends to bleed into the church. And so what's happening is we're raising a generation of kids who don't look at their Christianity from the standpoint of, I want to win this in the sight of my Lord. We've got kids and adults now who look at it from the standpoint of, God will affirm me no matter what I do. And that's in direct contradiction to what we see in, for instance, the words of our Lord, who said, strive to enter by the narrow gate. You have the words of Paul, who said he buffeted his body to make it a slave. And we just don't have that attitude.
Nathan, let me just come back at you for a minute here. You know, this kind of coddled existence doesn't quite match what Paul was talking about to Timothy, for instance, in 2 Timothy, where he used three different illustrations of an athlete and of a soldier and of a farmer. There's hard work there. You know, this is the Apostle Paul who talked about the Christian life even in terms of running a race. And, of course, you find this in the book of Hebrews as well, in chapter 12, where you press on. And, Nathan, I think you're onto something here. Are you saying that in the Christian life we should expect some adversity?
I would say that we would. Christ said that the world will hate us, and we need to expect that's going to happen.
Yeah, well, I think that's a very good point. And I think I especially appreciate what you said when you warned that kids who are always affirmed are going to have a false idea of who they are, but also of who God is. Because you're exactly right. God just doesn't affirm us. God's not some indulgent grandparent. The God of the Bible, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, the Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, is the God who is holy judge as well as loving Father. And that's a very important issue. Because, you know, one of the most insidious aspects of all this that comes in this whole self-esteem concern that fits part and parcel with this wimpy generation is the fact that we are told you can't use words like wrong, much less a word like sin. But that's at the very heart of the Christian worldview. That's why we understand who God is and why he sent Jesus Christ and why we need a Savior. You know, even the secular magazine, Psychology Today, is onto the problem. We as Christians have a much bigger picture of what's going on here. But we need to be thankful when even the secular world trips up on a problem this big and recognizes it as a problem. I'll be back with some final thoughts in just a moment. This is the Albert Miller Program. Well, as always, it comes down to worldview. It comes down to your basic presuppositions about life, about meaning, about why we were created and what we were created for. And when you look at all this, you realize that Psychology Today is onto something. Even from their secular worldview, which I think is still very much mired in self-esteem and in all the therapeutic kind of approaches, they recognize that something's wrong. And they just see it pragmatically in the fact that we have kids who don't grow up. They don't grow up to be adults, or if so, they grow up to be adults who basically continue to think the world is supposed to be a coddled, cuddly existence for them, not a place of trial and turmoil and trouble. I think we as Christian parents better take note of this, because it is our worldview that tells us that we know that children are not little innocent creatures, but they're born in sin. And that means that they must be taught. They must be disciplined. And it means that they have to learn the reality of the world that is made up of other sinners. And that means there are all kinds of hard things they're going to face. Do we want them to excel? Of course we do. Is it wrong for parents to want their kids to excel? No, so long as we want them to excel in the right things. And there's so much I'd want to say here just in these final comments. But for one thing, every single child of God, every single believer in the Lord Jesus Christ can, by the grace of God and by the power of God, excel in Christian virtues. That doesn't mean that every boy is going to grow up to be the commander-in-chief, that every kid's going to grow up to be a financial whiz. It doesn't mean that everyone's going to grow up to get the world's acclaim. But it does mean that in the end of the day, in the spirit of Hebrews chapter 11, every single Christian can be faithful to the Word of God, faithful to the call of the gospel, and faithful in service to the Lord Jesus Christ. And that's where true excellence is found, and that's where true satisfaction should be found. But this whole idea of a coddled existence and parents not allowing their kids to get a skinned knee or a low mark on a test or anything else, we can't grow up for them. And as Christian parents, we ought to understand with a particular insight that it is our responsibility to raise independent adults who will be ready to take on adult responsibility. We've been talking on this program about the delay of marriage, about the 30-something and 20-something generation that won't grow up. Maybe even Psychology Today is onto something we need to see as a cause of that. Parents who are coddling their kids and not helping them to grow up. Failure is a part of life. Disappointment and trouble, a part of life. Jesus said to his own disciples in a profound way, in a world in which they would even be persecuted, you will face trouble in this world. It's a lie when we tell our children otherwise, and it doesn't help them to face reality. It may give them a soft mattress to fall on for now, but it lies to them about what life is about and what they're going to face in the future. Let's grow up as parents and help our kids to grow up as adults. We'll be back tomorrow for a conversation that matters. We'll put truth on the line, and I will meet you there.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmoeller.com. You'll find archives of past shows, Dr. Moeller's daily crosswalk commentary, and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmoeller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Moeller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.